Welcome to episode 9 of the Level 5 Podcast. My name is Steve Willoughby along with Eric Reynolds, and we are talking business, we're talking leadership, we're talking sales, we're talking about your business. And again, you can learn more about Level 5 Podcast by going to level5consulting.com. That's LVL5consulting.com. On Facebook, you can look up Eric at EQR Coach, and on LinkedIn, it's Eric Q. Reynolds. Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
I look forward to all of our shows, but as you do every week, you have me planned out. This is the only part of my life that is planned out, so I appreciate that very much. But you're really talking about specific examples that when people called you, they said, hey, here's the problem I'm facing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. These are real world situations, and you've asked me as we've gone through these podcasts, you know, what's someone going to experience when they call you? I thought it would be interesting to spend some time on some example situations as to why people have reached out to me.
Can I put you on the spot first?
Sure.
Very quickly, for the person that just found the Level 5 Podcast and they're starting at episode 9 before they go back to, they're listening this time to see if they want to go back to listen, the 5 different levels very quickly as we discuss this.
Yeah, absolutely. So level 1, I lose, right? It's going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a victim. I'm in neutral. I can't get anything moving. Level 2, I win, you lose. So we've moved out of the losing mindset, but now in order for me to get a win, someone else has to lose.
Okay.
Level 3, I win, and if you win too, that's okay. So it's the level of rationalization. It's taking a win and, you know, not really caring so much about the collateral effects of that win. Level 4, shifting gears a bit, you win. So the giver, the person who's always doing and doing, if right. you will, for other individuals. And level 5 is we all win or we don't do this. And it's a fantastic place for a business to be simply because you're as excited about the things that are going right as the things that are going wrong. It's all opportunity.
That's all of those are so much of a mindset. But as you said that, and you've told me that several times, we've just discussed these 5 levels. But as you said that, it really struck me with somebody. In fact, I saw their picture in my mind. It was a conversation we had. Hey, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. I'm thinking of level 4. I got to get this done. Got to get this done. I'm so busy. Mm-hmm. And I finally said, you know, you're really not here to be busy. You're here to get things done. And yeah. we got to move to get things done because you can be so busy, you're not good for anybody. Mm-hmm. Let's bring that back a little bit. Was that a good example of level 4 right there, that they're so busy and so caring about the other people, they really don't worry about getting their job done?
It can be. Okay. It can be, and it's an intriguing part that does show up frequently for level 4s is the busyness.
Mm-hmm.
Busy, busy, busy. And usually, as we've mentioned in the past, that busyness comes crashing down when they have an event and the give back to them, the doing for them is not reciprocated. And then they flip over into level 1 and mm-hmm. say, you know, why do I make all that effort? Why do I do right. all these things for all these other people when they don't help me right. back?
And a lot of times it's because they don't even know you're doing that. So, but yeah. anyway, that's not what we're talking about, but it really added some clarity when you said it that time.
Yeah. It's a good example of, you know, to your point, let's get done what we need to get done. I need you to finish these things and accomplish these tasks. If you are just being busy for everybody, it's sort of like going through Chicago from Branson to get to Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it may eventually get done if someone helps that individual, but it's a long way around.
Right. So the reason Eric has allowed, well, I guess I don't know why Eric's allowed me to be the co-host of this podcast. The reason I ask him to be the co-host of the podcast is really my respect for him and our connection right off the bat. And he's talking about business. He's talking about leadership. He's talking about helping people's businesses. And that's what we're all about as we move forward. Not at the level he is, as far as truly training educating, helping your team move forward, and helping you in the leadership role move forward. The other reason I enjoy this podcast, enjoy the relationship with Eric is, yes, he's a coach. Yes, he's a lot of things. He's a doer as far as he's been in that chair before when it's his budget he has to hit, when he's leading that team, when he's making those decisions and talking to his sales team and all of those types of things. It's not something that, hey, I read this really cool book. He has read a bunch of them. He's also been there. And I think that's really important as we move forward. And I haven't done a good job of really asking you a question there. But I think it is something to talk about because, sure, yes, you can coach and you can consult and you can guide and you can do all those things. But that memory, that exercise of you being in that chair, whether it's millions or billions or whatever you're doing, you've played at the big levels, you've played at the small levels, and to some degree, they're just zeros behind there. You're still dealing with people and making the leadership decisions that you have to make.
Yeah, well said. I mean, the numbers are almost irrelevant, right? Depends upon the business side. Right. If it's a small business and their numbers are in the hundreds of thousands on revenue, just as an example, or it's a big business and it's in the billions, it doesn't really matter to the people who are stuck in the challenge, right?
Right.
There can be incredible similarities across that business spectrum. But yeah, it's very intriguing to me, having been there. And as we've talked about previously, you know, I'm an incredibly curious individual. So that's why I went into the formal coach training, to sort of understand, you know, I was having success leading teams and getting individuals on those teams motivated and getting them successful. I really didn't understand why so much. As crazy as that sounds, that would be something that would be curious for me. So once you get into that level of understanding and go, oh, I see how that worked out, sometimes it's circumstantial. For instance, my entrance into sales management was a situation where we were bought by another organization. And at that particular time, I was the sales individual killing it out there in the sales world. So they paid me to stay on through the transition for that period, assured me that they would have someone at the end of 6 months, and instead actually promoted me to the head of sales in 6 months. So there's lots of ways that people transition from sales into sales management. And we've talked about those challenges. They're different skill sets. You have to be a different individual as a sales manager when it comes to managing other people instead of doing for them. But yeah, it's been intriguing how it's developed over the years.
So I have been, he may not use this word, let's go with bugging Eric and say, well, let's talk about some of the things when you get those calls. What do people ask you about? And of course, there are no names here. We're not going to talk about specific businesses.
Oh, I will call people out. No, okay, I'm just kidding.
Your podcast, brother. I'm just along for the ride. But he has given us some real examples of what clients have talked about. And we're just going to go over these a little bit. And then if we have time, I've got just one thing that's kind of bugging me that we're going to talk about a little bit, get my own little counseling done here. But you've had people call you and say, man, we have rocked and rolled for 2 years. Things are really good. And I can't really maybe tell you exactly why they were good, but they were good. But here we are and they're not so good. And it's midway through the year. What do I do? Is that pretty much sum up what they were talking about?
That lines it up. Yeah. And in those situations, usually one of the first questions I'll ask is, what's changed? And believe it or not, that conversation can go 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
If the individual wants to, because the initial reaction is usually nothing. It's the same people. It's the same situation. It's no. And I'm thinking in my head, no, it's not. We're going to get there. We're eventually going to, you know, I as a coach, I'm going to help the individual understand stuff has changed as you've gone through it. For instance, if your sales were cruising, you've probably had some level of growth, right? You've hired other individuals into the team. You may have the same executive team in that situation, but things have changed. So analyzing what has changed is sort of the beginning of that particular process. And often when I have clients that approach me with this. It's a situation where their process and their accountability methodology is not developed enough to handle the growth. So sales are coming in, you know, and sales always lead revenue, right? Revenue trails sales, depending upon, as it's called, your day's sales outstanding, right? How long does it take you to turn that signature into dollars? Mm-hmm. As the slide begins, I can tell you as a business owner that you will begin to see your day's sales outstanding, DSO, continue to grow. And that is the first sort of harbinger of something's coming. Something wicked this way comes. you know, the like on the Gulf around Mississippi, I think Biloxi is where the Hurricane Hunters mm-hmm. fly out of in mm-hmm. the C-130s. You get into a situation where they're cruising, and I'm by no means a meteorologist, so this could be completely wrong, but let's just roll with it. I believe when they detect a low pressure cell, that can be one of the early warning signs that there's a good potential for development of a hurricane, or okay. the situation is starting to get right, you know, that type of thing. When your DSO starts fattening and getting larger and larger, you're running into issues, because what it essentially means is there could be several things wrong with your ability to turn the signature into a delivered revenue source for your organization.
So I need you to dumb that down for me and maybe a few other people, but it's probably just for me. day sales outstanding. I got to tell you, we've never used that terminology, so maybe we need to use that terminology. He just gave me that look like, wow. But anyway, Dale, so if I come to you and I sell and it's $5,000 and you write me a check for $5,000 and I bring that back with the order, that's pretty good, right? That's like one for one.
One day.
So, but if I get that order and now we've got to do some things and we're going to bill you and then you're going to call us and lie to us about how you didn't get the bill and all of that, and it's 90 days, then we got 90 days between there. That's what we're talking about,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
When you think about the extension, and just to be clear, maybe to repeat it, it's days sales outstanding.
Okay.
DSO.
Okay.
And so when you look at that number, you can think about, okay, you know, we've signed these deals in your example, right? But we're not getting the checks. But guess what? We're beginning
yeah.
the actual implementation
yeah.
of that contract, right? So you are basically fronting that contract mm-hmm. with some form of you're banking it. Mm-hmm. You're the banker in that case, or you're the bank. And so if they don't pay it 30 days. Oh, you know, we want to work with you, Steve, but we had, we had something come up and half of our equipment, you know, started to go on the fritz. So we had to focus on that, but we've got you queued up to pay you in the next, you know, payment cycle. Now you begin to have resources in your organization, whether they're there or not. Meaning you have to hire someone as this continues to blow just to make sure people are paying. And it's really crazy to me how businesses often band-aid or do triage on the wrong end of the business versus the sales team signing contracts and making them accountable for the deal that's coming in and the revenue hitting the door.
So my idea to hire 7 people to help us collect probably wasn't a great opportunity of how to spend resources. We could have went to the salespeople and said, why don't we ask these people to pay in advance, right?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Something. I mean, it could be restructuring the contract so that you get a certain amount in advance.
Right.
I mean, for most organizations, depending upon how you recognize your revenue that you get in the door, I'll just do simple math. If it takes you a month to implement a client, right, to get them up and running, and let's say you collect $1,000 up front as part of your agreement, and then there's a certain monthly amount that you get after that, $1,000 has to be spread out over however long it takes you to get them to actually live or functioning status. So you know, you not only have that concern when customers don't pay, because you're bankrolling that whole process without any return on investment. But you also have the back end of promises, promises. And again, that's where, yes, people will triage the back end when you go to the sales rep and say, what's going on with this deal? That's just sales management.
Right.
If they can't cut a check, we're better off not doing business
right.
with them.
Right. Right. And sometimes we can get in a real weak mindset there that, oh, we've got to do all of this. And it's like
lack mentality sets in at that point, right? You start to get level one-ish, right? Lack. Oh my gosh. We're, you know, this is just the way it is in the market. We got to ride this wave. We can't afford to cut this customer loose. Yeah. Those types of things. And man, the lack thing is just like, vice grip. You ever been out to Top of the Rock in that museum that's out there with the short faced American bear thing that's 9 feet tall and bigger than that's lack.
Yeah.
That's on your back if you're starting to triage your back end revenue.
There you go. So they've called you. They said things were going well. And midway through this third year, they're starting to really fall off and lag and all of that. And your example was a lot of things can happen here. You think it's the same, but maybe you've hired this person or maybe you've got new people on the production side. There's always something that triggers what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times in my example of, you know, it's cruising for a couple of years and then they start to lag in the third year, that could be taking place in, say, year three of the business. And it's 4 and 5 that really nailed it. And then 6, it's starting to taper again. Could be year one, where years 1 and 2 were awesome and year 3 is starting to taper. So once you begin to identify what's changed, and, you know, I look at it as my role, especially to coach people, owners, CEOs, into uncovering what has changed and looking at, okay, this has changed. Here are your behavioral expectations, if you even really understand those for your team at a high level, understand those expectations. How is that matching up? And it's almost, well, in fact, every time it's been apparent that there is a disconnect there. Mm-hmm. The needs of what's, you know, these folks over here, they're going through their day executing the following things, no longer meet the needs of the business as it continues to grow. And somebody needs to take a breath and retool that process. So that's just something that eventually comes out.
And when you're talking to them and you're helping them through that process, I mean, if things are going well, sometimes that's a bigger opportunity. I look forward to those days, but sometimes that's a bigger opportunity for real trouble because things are going well. You know, you're not paying attention like you used to pay, maybe, or you're not, you know, those meetings, well, we got enough money in the bank to pay all the bills, so the meetings may not be as good as they need to be, or whatever that looks like.
Classic example. Year rolls around after your current sales plan that you're on. You've set the, you've set your quota goals and everything, and you've laid out your processes, and you just say, well, things are going well. We're pretty much just going to carbon copy this puppy and roll it into next year, right? I don't see why we need to look at it. And then you're banging your head against the wall 3 quarters later because you whiffed it. Yep. You know, you just took an easy swing because things were going well.
Yeah. And I say this out of experience, not out of, if you're pulling out the sheet of paper and going, this looks great, let's just change the date on this. Mm-hmm. If that becomes standard operating procedure, sooner or later, you're going to look around and go, oh, maybe we should have changed a little bit more than the date of that particular program.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Worked so well last year. Let's just go with it.
It's worked the last 7 years, so I can't even imagine why they wouldn't. They're probably looking forward to paying for this. I can almost guarantee you. It's like vintage. This is something that I'm going to bounce around on you just a little bit, but the phone call that you received that said, hey, brand new business owner, things seem to be going well, but man, I haven't built out that sales team yet. I'm not sure my sales team is really helping this company grow. It's a lot on me right now. What do you talk to people about when they bring that to you?
Founder syndrome. It's a real thing. I've experienced it both in my clients. I've experienced it working for founders in the marketplace. There develops this, to properly say this, there's this veneer of optimism and infallibility, unstoppability, if you will, for the corporate momentum. You know, I want you to be a part of this. I want to bring you in, and we are cruising, we are rocking, and we are rolling through the marketplace. But that's not actually what's happening. It's not that things aren't successful, right? Mm-hmm. And that things aren't rolling. But a few episodes back, we talked about the next generation leader. One of the first things that book hits you with is you're doing too much.
Yep.
And so founders develop this. It can come from a lot of different areas, which is why it's so prevalent. But it's either a mistrust, a self-inflated sense of self-importance, reasons why they don't let other individuals do things, right? And in particular, depending upon the situation, the financial scenarios and, you know, what's going on. So in those situations, what has to happen is the individual needs to be coached on a way that they can be okay with developing other highly trusted individuals within the organization. So that conversation begins with, what makes you trust someone? How do you trust someone? And I'm just going to throw this in from experience. Usually what I hear in the first conversation is not actually the truth, because they have not even begun to think about. And there's a certain amount of, it's almost like, I don't even know the right way to phrase it. It's like this coat that founders wear, where they think that everyone needs to see them in that coat, needs mm-hmm. to see that things are going well, business is doing good, how's it going? And sometimes people can unwittingly just sort of be cheering them on, but that's just heaping pressure, right? And so they're very hesitant to talk about, these are the real challenges that I'm facing. And by the way, my personal life is crap at this point. You know, I've got no time for my family or any other things. My entire world is dedicated. You know, I'm losing sleep at night. I suddenly have GERD. I can't, you know, I got some acid reflux out of nowhere. It's just this thing that can build up there. And the way to attack that and to get past it is to really hit those trust issues first and foremost, coach them and help them get comfortable with who they can trust, what type of individual would they trust, and then begin to look for those individuals. They might have been there all along, right? But they may have to seek them also.
Ed Milet is a guy I follow, and he's got some podcasts going out, and he had a really pretty direct take on the fact of you're trying to be too cool. You're trying mm-hmm. to control everything. You're trying to go through there like you don't need anybody, and you've got to, and nobody wins that way. You've got to allow yourself to be quote unquote uncool. Take a step back and say, this is what we have to get done. Now, I'm not saying you agree with Ed, but that kind of made sense and exactly what you were talking about there.
Yeah, they, you know, if you take a typical board situation for a startup, you have startup investors. You may have some angel investment, you know, but you've got individuals who are putting money in either their own or from funds that they manage. And they're doing this for 20 or so businesses. How engaged are those board members on your quarterly board call? The answer is, as is typically the case, if there's five of them, there's going to be a mix of personalities. There might be one of those individuals that really digs into the situation and sort of establish themselves as that leader of questioning. And the CEOs or whoever begin to know, if I can get past Joe, if I can get past Jane, The others just sit on the video call and, you know, yeah. they're not really saying anything. They look at numbers. They may ask one question. And it might just be the same question they asked last quarter and they want an update type of thing. So there's a lot of room in that for chicanery, shall we say, mm-hmm. you know, hijinks, whatever that's going on in those meetings. And to your point, those CEOs, they're not really, it's showtime, right?
Right.
Board meeting is showtime. Yep. It's like, okay, things are doing this. We found that. I mean, they will think of anything they can to bring up that's positive right now. However, and don't worry about the revenues because, you know, we had a rough quarter. This was unusual. Yep. This customer said yes, then said no, but we're going to bring him back to yes.
You know, the same thing I've said the last five quarters.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know the drill.
Yeah.
So it's one of those cases where it's a big relief for that person. And I've seen those emotional letdowns when they finally drop their guard.
Yeah.
Some of it, I mean, candidly, is just open sobbing.
Yeah.
Because it's this, it's not a sadness. It's like a relief. And again, that goes back to, you know, the niceness of coaching and the confidential nature of those. So, but it is really something from that. Okay. Now we're in reality land, right? Now we're back in the realm of what's really going on in our company. How do we find people that you can trust to move forward? Because you can't carry all that water.
To me, that's why I always want to be a friend of business, and I always want to look at business as a real opportunity to help our economy, a real opportunity to help our culture. And I just think successful business people get robbed all of the time because yeah. people don't either. They become successful. So we didn't see those years when they were trying to, you know, just they were struggling to get by and working a lot of hours and doing all of those things. But I think that's why businesses need a friend. And look, there's a lot of businesses that are in trouble and could do some minor things, you know, like maybe yeah. sweeping the sidewalk to help out what they're trying to do. But man, business owners and business leaders are really under the gun a lot of time.
Oh yeah.
And what I would add to that, and this isn't copy that Eric gave me, so he may say, well, I disagree a little bit, but that's why you do need a coach. You need a system. You need a program that not just brings you back down to earth. That's not what, but really has clarity and you can be transparent, because as a guy that shoots his mouth off about transparency, there's a lot of people that don't want to talk about transparency right, when it right. comes right down to
right,
it. They
right.
have their own level of transparency they want to get to yeah. and they don't want to go any further
it's
than
more
that.
Of a frosted glass.
Yes. Yes. yes yeah. But that's why this coaching is so important, because you yeah. can help them see the processes and systems and help the people move through that.
Yeah. And I know this is in some ways it's a nauseating cliche at times, but it honestly is in the environment of a coaching dynamic. It's a safe space, to be honest. And just being able to do that can be a huge relief. The coach is not there to tell these business owners what to do. The coach is there to help them realize they know the next steps, but for whatever reason, whether it's a gremlin, as we've talked about in the past, or an energy block at a certain level, there's reasons why they're not doing it, and get to the bottom of those.
You're listening to episode 9 of the Level 5 podcast. You can learn more about Eric Q. Reynolds at LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds, on Facebook at EQR Coach, or go to the website LVL5consulting.com. That's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com. Today, we're really just going over real world examples, and Eric's able to take those real world examples of people calling in saying, here's the situation I'm in, and then he helps them through coaching. And as he talks to you about this, think of your business. What would that question be if you were to call Eric? What would you talk to him about? Would it be like this, that an individual wanted to hand off his business to the next generation, but worried all kinds of reasons. We'll just talk about one. We don't always agree on what should be next for the business. So somebody's been in the business a long time. He wants to hand it off to the next generation, but worried what that next generation's going to do. And hopefully there's a lot of time there, because I think this could take some time. But how were you able to help them?
So first approach with that particular situation for me was to have a conversation on what do they think is going to happen if it had to go today. You know, George, if you had to do this today, how would you go about doing it? And what do you think would happen? And what's interesting about what often gets discussed there is that it's a situation that's going to be out of their control anyway. So, you know, these individuals, whether they inherited the business or started the business, they have a lot of, you know, sweat equity built into this thing, right? Mm-hmm. They have just labored hard, and they have gotten it to this point. They think there is a certain formula that is going to keep the business going forward at the levels that they currently have the business. And that is the biggest, fattest assumption that you could ever make in that scenario. It's a classic, because it went down this way once, it will go down this way every time going forward. And the reality that tends to play out is that individual that may be the heir to the business who's disagreeing with them on how it should be done could actually be the answer for the future. And that's why they're disagreeing, because they have an entirely different perspective. They want to manage the business in a certain way for the future and don't believe that the way we've been doing it is the way we should keep going, you know, without changing anything. So you really have to address the fears in those cases, because there's, you know, those gremlins are hopping all over that. They're just having a grand old time coming up with 100 reasons why the, you know, engine number 4 will go out and the plane will go right into the mountainside if I hand it off.
Mm-hmm.
And fantastically, in those situations, this one in particular, there wasn't even conversation happening on what would you do if I turned the business over to you today.
But they just knew it wasn't
going
to work.
They just knew it wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to work. Yeah.
Right. So a little bit of ego there, right? A little bit of ego and fear that what if it does better and all of that, you know?
That's right. And intriguingly, you know, those are very real sentiments as they've been expressed. But what people often don't think about when you're faced with a situation and you say, okay, these are the three things that could go wrong. In this case, if I turn this over, you know, to someone as an heir, and I've, you know, noted a couple here, the workers in the company are loyal to me. I'm not sure they'll be loyal to Johnny or Jane. Why? Why? What about that? You know, what are you even sure Johnny would keep the same folks, you know, as he begins to transition? Let's go out 15 years from now.
Right.
You're taking care of the grandkids.
Right. And your staff's 104 because you wouldn't let them change it, you know.
Yeah. You're fishing.
Yeah.
15 years from now. Do you really care? So there has to be a dialogue that gets established there, not on how, but where the individual wants to take the business, right? And that person who is handing it off needs to develop a level of comfort with engine number four going out is only one possible outcome
there. Right.
And right. It's actually has, you know, just like all the others, it has the same level of odds of happening.
So if somebody is listening and said, man, I could have that very same conversation with Eric. It's not that you're going to be trying to talk them in or out of anything. It's going to be getting them asking the questions and walking down that road on their own, correct?
Yes.
I mean, that's where you're trying to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. If the answer to that question was, well, I don't want to turn it over because Johnny has a really bad cocaine habit.
Mm-hmm.
okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
And so now that you, you know, have expressed that and you know, he has that issue, what do you think your next step is? It's not about me. It's not, you know, what I think they should do. I turn into that individual as a consultant. You know, if it's sales and revenue, that's where I'm going to come in and say, here's my recommendations on this. But that recommendation is never going to be, you shouldn't turn your business over to your, you know, that's at a higher level right. than sales and revenue.
Right. You're just going to help them ask better questions before they turn right. or don't turn that business over.
Yeah. Does the heir in this case even understand what, you know, the day's sales outstanding is, just mm-hmm. as an example, you know, do they understand what the mechanics of their pipeline are and how those function? And if they don't, I can help with that. I can take the time to explain to them what's going on and get it to a sort of a packaging level that person may not ever feel 100% comfortable with, but they're in a much better space than when I found them.
You're listening to episode 9 of the Level 5 podcast. His name is Eric Reynolds, and we're talking about real-world examples of what clients need when they call Eric. And it's not all this, but these are great examples. And, man, this strikes home. I've got several people. So somebody called Eric, said, look, I got a lot of staff that have been key to my business for a long, long time. They've done great things. They're like a family to me, but they have grown complacent. They have grown comfortable. Productivity is down, and I'm not sure how to address it without a complete disaster. Sometimes this is a question, but I would think if you're constantly talking about, hey, you've had another anniversary and we're so proud of our long-term team and our long and number of, you know, if everything is about time, like we're a wine, that can really go down. Because I went down that road. There was a time in my life that if you were here for 12 years, wow, the only thing you could do better is be here for 13. Mm. And the second time around, I will tell you that the amount of years do not matter. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm appreciative, great. But, you know, you're not here because you've been here for 4 years. You're here because yeah. you're productive today, because you're helping us today, because you're adjusting and helping us grow. If you ever sit back and go, I'm a long-term employee, you're probably fired. I mean, yeah. it's kind of just because I was that person so much mm-hmm. and worried about long-term stuff. See, I'm sorry, the support group came out there just a little bit. But you see what I'm saying.
Oh. Yeah, I do. I do. It's not a longevity contest, mm-hmm. right? It's no. not. It's not about survival at the organization. And it's really, you know, when I got approached in this particular case, one that I can think of, it was a situation where, again, let's talk about those fears, right? So what happens when you forget about how you're going to address? Let's not talk about the how. What happens when you address productivity? You want to get it to a spot where everybody understands there's a set of behaviors I need you to execute on, all right? And whether you've been here 1 year, whether you've been here 12 years, these are the things that you need to be taking care of in the following increments. I need you to do this amount X weekly. I need you to do Y monthly. I need you to do Z quarterly. And so what happens when you lay that out? Usually the first feedback I get is, what are the behaviors again? Could you back up? You know, so, but it helps me understand where we are. And go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, do you have that conversation when they're starting to talk, what behaviors do you want? When it's all they're talking about is results. Yeah. I'm critical of us sometimes because we want to talk about the results. And it's like, you know, Nick Saban, I don't know if I'd enjoy sitting down and having a beer with Nick Saban or not, but I'd do it, right? And I don't even drink beer. But Nick Saban does the greatest when he talks about that. Winning a championship is a result. It is a result of a process of doing things the right way many, many days in a row.
Yeah.
And but sometimes in business, it's like, we want to hit X in quarter one. Well, what's that going to take? Because just saying it won't happen. Trust me.
Yeah. Breathing life into it does not make it happen.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it helps to go to their expectation, because often, for instance, in this case, the expectation of me actually taking action on Peter, because he's, you know, one of those long timers, and Peter's noticed he's been leaving a little earlier and getting here a little later, and people are starting to ask what Peter does all day, that kind of thing, right? So it's one of those cases where identifying their sort of worst fear as to what happens, there's often a lot of just non-reality in what goes down there. And it can be difficult for individuals to think that, oh my gosh, Peter, you know, if I let him go, it's just a favorite of all the people in the organization. And that may outwardly be the case, but there could be little celebrations going on once that termination mm-hmm. actually happened. And I don't, that's not my answer, right? Fire him. Let's see what happens. You know, it's not that kind of approach, but let's discuss what you think is going to go wrong. I will help you come up with ways to triage those things and probably call you out on things that I think are a little non-realistic that right. they're going to happen. But also, you know, again, back to that, well, how do you even know that individual's doing their job in the first place? Mm-hmm. Have you ever held them accountable to any kind of, you know, thing, or is it best efforts kind of thing, you know? And everybody needs to row in the same direction now so we can all, you know, achieve.
And is that more, I don't want to ask this question, does that happen more than people would expect, that even in, you drive by and they look like great businesses that are just rocking and rolling, and it's more of that, you know, go get it for the Gipper type of thing?
You have
type
no
of
idea.
Thing.
Yeah. And I would say it's definitely the majority, to safely state that. There are organizations that have made it off of just continual great ideas along the lines. And there are ones that simply have established processes and accountabilities and expected behaviors and incentives toward those behaviors, very important, whether you're sales or not, that really have it locked down tight. But the vast majority are just sort of, come on, man, you know, we went into this business or this market segment, and we had a great idea and we got lots of business, and now we're just kind of trying to keep getting lots of business, but we're not really spending any time on even understanding why we got lots of business. So they're just high level questions that are worth exploring that help you drill down into, okay, so if I go back to the sales team, what do those behaviors look like?
Mm-hmm.
Just give me one behavior every week, one every month, and one every quarter. Let's just start with something simple. And when you put that out there and say, you know, hey, Steve, I'd really like you to begin executing on these. This is part of your compensation package now. And so we need you to hit these metrics. That's going to be very revelatory as to where Steve's mindset is. And if it sort of begins to be this bristling of, you know, oh, now I have to.
I've been here for 25 years.
That's right. Yeah. I know my way around this market blindfolded. Yeah. I don't need a set of behaviors.
And it looks like you've been doing that.
Yes. You got all that bruising on your forehead, you know.
Yeah.
So it can be uncomfortable in that moment, but at the end of the day, the simple answer as a manager in that is, look, Steve, you're already doing these behaviors. That's basically what you're telling me. So great. You know, that means you're going to kill your number,
right?
And you're going to do very well in sales here. So this is not a diversion off the road to your comp plan, right?
It's a GPS lock-in, and
that's
then
right.
This can take you where you want to go.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, salespeople, I know because I am one, can have this mentality of, oh, but if you sent anybody else in there, they're not going to buy. I mean, I've had adult people look at me and I'm going, so they're going to shut down their $1 million business right. And just because you're not working anymore?
Yeah.
Damn, you're important.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how important you were. So, yeah. So anyway, I hope you were able to help him or her and she was able to get that taken care
yeah,
of.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, it's a situation where, in those cases, again, conversation just needs to start happening and it needs to be based in tangible ways to identify that person is basically doing the behaviors that I expect of them. We're getting the right kinds of outcomes and we're moving things forward. If it's just left to vagueness, then this is going to set right back in.
We have a couple more to go over. Again, you're listening to episode 9 of the Level 5 podcast. You can learn more about Eric Q. Reynolds at LVL5consulting.com. My name is Steve Willoughby, and Eric allows me to co-host this podcast with him. Doesn't even charge me for all the stuff I learned, so I'm very appreciative of that. This, we have two, and this one really, really hits home to me because sometimes you can be so busy, and we've kind of talked about this in a couple of these questions, but one of the things I tell the team here is I'm not asking you to work harder. In fact, I would tell you that if we worked harder where we are right now in some levels, we're just going to get a little bit more of what we have already received.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to rise up, do a better job, and these are all in good ways that we're talking about this, but don't worry about working harder. Let's work truly smarter. And I know that's one of those, you know, cliches, but cliches are cliches for a reason. We've got to rise up and do better on every call. We've got to rise up and talk to our clients in a better way. And to me, that's what this is talking about. They're putting out fires. They're leading meetings. They're trying to ensure productivity's happening, but no time on the strategy and vision and simply can't get that done. I mean, that's kind of a success trap because you're getting things done and then you think at 9 o'clock at night's the time to put the strategy together and there's no clear head or anything there.
Right.
So
nothing but exhaustion right. staring you in the face at right. that point. Yeah. You know, to your earlier point, about just sort of squeezing and squeeze, it's like, do you want to take the blood from the turnip yep. approach?
Right.
You know, do you just want to keep tightening your grip on that to get a couple more drops out of that? Or do you just want to find a better, you know, root right. vegetable in right. that case? Or, you know, I don't know, plant potatoes by the thousands, whatever analogy you want to use there. So it's a situation where a lot of individuals, in this particular case, when, you know, I was approached, by this is actually a female CEO in this case. It was like, my first question was, what happens if you just vanish one day? What would happen at your organization if you just disappeared? And usually the responses to that are very telling for a lot of different reasons, but there are certain situations that, you know, no one would lead this meeting or, you know, accounting would go off the rails because no one's checking, you know, what that revenue flow looks like and sort of knows it in their head that, you know, this is where it should be tracking and this is where I want it to be. And a lot of the reasoning that comes out at that point are all just things that that individual has not taken the time to communicate to the various other business leaders. And so when you look at it as, okay, I need to swing my elbows as a GM, as a CEO, and find a way to get time where I am not mentally exhausted to look at strategy and vision for where we're going, that needs to be defined as to what that needs to be for the individual. It's different for everybody. And it also needs to gain consensus and understanding across the executive team. And so that they understand their part in helping you do that. maybe they're there with you. Maybe it's, you know, you want that time with your executive team to collaborate and come up with strategic ideas. But what often happens in those meetings, you know, people come into that room. Let's say you set the meeting for Wednesday at 3. By God, we're going to have a 2-hour strategy session Wednesday at 3. I think I could make this into a sitcom episode, actually, this very mm-hmm. setting right here. Because what does everybody bring into that room Wednesday at 3?
Their phones, their notepads, pins, and their attitudes.
Their attitudes, i.e. their entire day or week to that point. Ooh, boy, man, I'm just trying to bang this email out real quick before I pay attention, you know, that type of thing. So I'm all about non-conventional ways to approach strategy. First of all, if you can, get them offsite. It's not just, I don't care if you take them to Bob Evans, you know, or McDonald's for that matter. So it breaks the cycle, right? It breaks that sort of environment that they're in.
Yep.
And it breaks the habits of that environment. And the phones go off. I mean, you will probably witness as a leader, someone who looks like they're having actual like withdrawal mm-hmm. symptoms because their phone is off and they're not in the office. You know, they're like, their mind is just going. And that right there is not someone who is able to help you with strategy at that point. So just the mere interactions of the individuals, I recommended in this case, get them off site, make it brief, tell them we're going to talk for 45 minutes over a lunch. We're going to talk about strategy. And all I want you to do is note the body language and the engagement of those individuals for that time. Ask them simple questions. I don't know, make them up. What do you think the strategy should be for us for the next 3 years? And don't really worry about so much what they're telling you. I mean, you don't want to waste the thought power, right? But be looking at how they are actually existing in that environment, okay? And then from that moment, you really get an understanding why it's hard to get any strategy going because everybody can't turn the rest off or so spun up on the tactics, right? Tactical, tactical, tactical. That's the strategic, just there's no space for it, if that makes sense.
So 3 years ago when I got this gig for the first, I don't know, I think it was like 9-10 months, I wouldn't take a key. And they would go, you are the general manager of this radio station. You do not have a key. I said, yeah. You don't need me to have a key. And finally, I needed to take a key because there were some Saturdays that I wanted to get on. I don't have a key. But but it was really a point that I'm not here to help you with. You got that. We're working on, and it's not because it's me or anything else, but I was brought in not to become part of the wagon team. I was, let's go get some better wagons so you guys don't have to push so hard. You know, and I don't know, looking back, if you would have agreed with that or not agreed with that. It's what happened, and it made its point. But sometimes, especially someone who has done it in the past and they may like getting in there and showing the old dude can still do it, I didn't have that desire at all to do that. That's not where we needed to go.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to say, well, that was good. If it was wrong, tear into me a little bit. But I just wanted to be very careful of that mentality.
So I think that in general, what you're saying is the right approach. The question I would have is, was everybody else aware of what you were trying to do? You know, did they know that this is how I want to exist? Which I'll sum up your statement by saying you want to have the high beams on all the time.
Yeah.
You want to, and you can't have it all the time, but a majority of the time. And that's the way a good CEO, GM, whoever's at the top of that pyramid should be existing throughout their day. The management team that's underneath them are essentially the owners of their business, mm-hmm. whether that's sales or marketing or accounting or whatever it is. They're owners of that part of the business. They're making the executive decisions. And when they need to roll something up to you, they know they need to bring it to you. They give you the idea. Here's my recommendation, Steve. Take a look at it. Let me know if you agree. That way you can keep the 40% of your time tactical. That's how it begins to get realistic. The other 60% of the time, you are free to have your high beams on, going around and just examining, you know, strategic opportunities, whether it's something that you, you know, want to just focus on, like outdoors, you know, advertising or whatever, whatever it might be, you have the bandwidth to do that mentally and physically.
Eric, there's a time that I was going to create a website called youremployeesareyourfault.com. And one of the things that had always aggravated me a lot when, because I heard this a lot growing up in business, your employees can't handle that. Your employees. And I always pushed back and said, our employees are moms and dads and sons and daughters and aunts and uncles, and they've got people and they got bills to pay. They can handle a hell of a lot more than what you think.
Yeah.
And it was never taken in. But today we had a conversation and I said there would be a lot of books that would say we can't talk about this in this sales huddle because it might be seen to be negative or might be seen to be too transparent. And I said, there'd be a lot of people that would say you can't handle this. But that's not the people I see on the screen on this Teams call right now. It's people that handle all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. We're coming together. We got to handle this together moving forward. And it wasn't just today that we started talking about that. You know, I mean, it's been that same old thing. Next time you're down here and you see Josh Clark, just to say, hey, lean in, and he can do a five minute on me about all the words I say in these meetings, right? So there's a little bit of pride to that. Yeah, exactly, the drinking game. But sometimes it is when you look at employees, and I understand that not, you know, you got different levels of employees, and sometimes you have summertime employees, and sometimes you have 24. Yeah. I get all that. But sometimes when we have that mindset about employees of what they can't handle or can't do, and we feed into that, and then we get surprised that they're not there helping us, you know, put out the fire at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We've told them all along they can't do anything. Right. So now we want them to jump back and do that. Am I crazy?
No, that happens. You put them in this mental space, right? You categorize them as, and sort of limit them on, here's the beginning and the end of their capability. And yeah, so when those crises pop up, it's time to throw the cape on, you know. I think it may be a Sandler sales method phrase. I'm not sure. I heard it from a consultant out of St. Louis, but basically they seagull it, you know, they fly in and they shit all over everything, mm-hmm. you know, and so you do that because you're partly angry that you have to be the one doing it, right? And secondly, you don't really know everything about every intricacy of their role. So you're just kind of driving it off your own executive ability, you know, to make a decision. It's kind of like, I don't care if it's the right decision. Somebody's making a decision here kind of thing. And this is what we're going to say to the customer. This is what you need to go back to and tell the customer. If you're having those conversations with, let's say, the manager of customer service or whatever the case may be, that's tough because, again, that individual should be coming to you and saying, hey, Steve, ran into this problem. Here's how I'd like to address it. Let me know you're on board with this. And you may tell them, yeah, I'm on board. And by the way, you got it going forward. You don't need to bring this to me because I trust you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Speed of trust, mm-hmm. Stephen Covey. So you have to develop that network within your own organization. Otherwise the cape never comes off. You sleep in the cape at night. Yeah.
100%. I hope you've enjoyed podcast 9 of the Level 5 podcast. Should say episode 9 of the Level 5 podcast as much as I have. But here's what I really hope. I hope that you will go to LVL5consulting.com and learn about Eric Reynolds. If you prefer to do that on Facebook, it's @EQRCoach. And on LinkedIn, it's Eric Q. Reynolds. And as we talked about earlier, not only does he have the consulting and coaching chops, and he can talk to you about all the different training he's had and certification, but he's been in the game. He has led teams. He has sold. He has done these types of things. So when he sits down with you, it's not a paint-by-numbers type of thing by any way. It's really him taking a look at your situation and helping you ask better questions, helping you get a better view of that, maybe a different angled view. So if you're having trouble with sales, if you're having trouble with your business, we would encourage you to think of Eric Q. Reynolds at Level 5 Consulting. And we haven't talked phone number in a while. I mean, they can get all of that at lvl5consulting.com, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So
it's all out there.
As we just kind of wrap this up, I mean, this is what you do, and you help people, and it's not a, you know, it'd be a lot easier if you just came and mowed the yard, right? I mean, you can get that done and say, here, I started there, I ended here. Yeah, this gets a little bit more complicated and all of that. But when it comes right down to it, we're talking about issues and we're talking about people. We have to keep that in mind, too.
Yeah. And we have to get to the heart of the matter quick. And, you know, I'm again, not going to adopt a coaching or consulting method that, if I want to go from Branson to Kansas City, I don't go through Chicago, as used in the earlier analogy. We have to be direct, honest, accountable, and realistic with what's around us. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to make any change.
The other thing we haven't talked about in a while is you're not looking for a 4 or 5 year gig for each business. And in fact, you're pretty much anti that. If we can't get things wrapped up in a year to 16 months, you're not going to be very comfortable with it.
Exactly. Yeah. No offense, but I don't want to hang around and just be sort of parasitic on your books as like, oh, we need this individual in order to work. It should not be that way. Because no one tells you to factor in a certain amount of money for a consultant as part of your business expense in order to be successful. That I don't believe that's being taught anywhere currently. So they come in, you know, we come in, I come in at certain times. I want to engage, impact, change, and move on.
His name is Eric Q. Reynolds, Level 5 Consulting. You can find out more, lvl5consulting.com. We'll talk to you next week.